Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
Our next guest is Alan Kryzak, music artist and filmmaker, as well as a prominent composer of scores for silent films, including one that celebrates its 100th anniversary this year, the 1920 John Barrymore classic, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. His piano concerto for this movie will be airing on Turner Classic Movies this August 13th at 6 a.m. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
And, well, first off, these are difficult times that we're living in, and I just wanted to ask you, you know, is the current situation impacting your creativity in any way? Are you able to stay active in the time of COVID?
Well, it's at times like this, it's actually easier to be a composer than a strictly performing musician, Matt, because it's kind of like being an author. You work in isolation anyway. So I've been trying to make the best of the COVID isolation up here in Maine, working on a new project with Ukrainian-born pianist Svetlana Belsky, and she's in Chicago, and she's been recording my new collection of nocturnes called Lux Internum, and so that's been very helpful during the isolation phase, because her and I have been working long distance, just little notes here and there on Facebook, and the project's recorded, so we're ready to release soon.
That's very interesting, and we might get to talk about this project a little later on as well, because I am interested in that too. And but there's lots to talk about. So, I mean, this is the first time we speak, and I thought it would be nice to start off our conversation with sort of a general question in a way, and you feel free to answer it in whatever way you like, you know, because I understand that you're both a music artist, but you're also a filmmaker, and given that you work with film music a lot, you know, I was just wondering, did you always think that you would somehow want to work within both of these arts?
Yeah, it's a strange thing. It seems very natural to me. My dad was an architect, and my mom was a very free-thinking police officer who was just very into art. So all these books and encyclopedias around the house I read about the Renaissance and everything. So I kind of grew up thinking that it's normal to be many things, like, you know, Da Vinci being a poet or painter and architect, cannon maker, whatever. So I grew up obsessed with films, and especially my early years in horror film. I was obsessed with Dracula, Frankenstein, all the great Universal monsters. And somehow music and film was, I kind of got interested exactly at the same time, and there wasn't really a division point. So it just seemed natural that cut to 40 years later, or in that case, the first films that I did in the mid-80s, it just seemed natural that I would be either doing silent horror film, new music for that, or down the road a little bit further, directing my own documentary films that have been up here in Maine on public television. So making film and making film music is really close to me. They're very close, similar processes, Matt, because of the timeline editing. It's just, you think the same way with film music, and then you see that timeline when you're editing a film, and you kind of think the same way. It's a very close part of the brain for me.
Oh, yeah, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is whether, you know, working within both art forms somehow informs you when you're working either with music or with film.
It makes you think about silence a lot, because the first thing I do, it's called spotting. Like when you watch your film and you just decide where you want music to be, I do kind of what's called a negative spotting technique, where, like for Broken Blossoms or Dr. Jekyll and Hyde for Turner Classic Movies, I watch the whole movie with a blank music score. I just kind of scribble notes. But I would definitely put notes into where I don't want music or don't want any kind of sound, so that I could leave some breathing room for the drama on the screen. And that kind of cuts over into filmmaking, where you try to let your editing and in documentary film, you try to let the people kind of breathe in between sentences so that you have a pace. So working with my first film scores were silent film, like Nosferatu in New York and Intolerance in New York City as well. Watching those just made you appreciate silence more, because you had an hour of music and you didn't feel like you had to pack all your information and your inspiration in. So you could really film really lets a composer spread out and take long strides and long breaths. And you don't feel like you're so constrained, like in a piece of concert music.
By the way, Intolerance is one of my favorite movies, so I might have even watched it with your score. I'm not sure whether I have, but I've seen it many times, actually.
Oh, that was a monster. Film. Yeah, that was a monster. Actually, I don't think they picked that up, my score on that, on cable. Right. Yeah, but it was live at Symphony Space on a film series called Censorship, hosted by Martin Scorsese. And it was a live score with four electric guitars and violin and percussion, and that we performed that live, and it was quite an endurance feat, because by the end our strumming right hand was not really anticipating what it would feel like after 3 hours, you know, so it had to plan ahead a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I didn't think of that, but that's definitely I would see how that would be a problem. I want to go back a little bit and just ask you, in terms of actually, you know, becoming interested in film and music, who were some of the film composers that you remember becoming aware of and who perhaps influenced you in your formative years?
The very first stuff I heard as a really young, but honestly, Twilight Zone. I was amazed by, first of all, how challenging and dramatic and terrifying some of those stories were on primetime TV. But the scores really stuck out, because that and the TV series Kung Fu, they were the first atonal and experimental harmonic new music film scores that I ever heard, even though they were in miniature form like Twilight Zone, you know. But the composers there, we're talking about Bernard Herrmann, Elmer Bernstein. These are some of the great film composers of major films later on, of course, Hitchcock with Bernard Herrmann, and Elmer Bernstein with To Kill a Mockingbird. So I actually didn't know I was listening to film composers, Matt. I just loved the music I was hearing on Twilight Zone. And that's my very first memory of thinking, like, where is this sound coming from?
Oh, I'm a big fan of the Twilight Zone as well, you know. So mm-hmm. I recently actually just rewatched a few of the episodes back to back. I was thinking of just watching them all, actually. They're so fascinating. You definitely can watch them back to back. I feel like
they're so challenging
on it.
Yeah, and they're so challenging. The subject matter does not flinch. You know, you have subjects on that could be applied to today, you know, as far as how we deal with each other, how we deal with neighbors.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned earlier that you were drawn to horror film, and I wanted to go back to that point. Why do you think you were drawn to them?
Oh, I was really into horror movies as a very young kid. I don't know why exactly. My mom was very tolerant, as I said, and I had a graveyard on my dresser when I was like 8, and I had all the Universal Monster models on top of that, including a glow-in-the-dark skull. So some of my friends were afraid of me, but the ones who understood me got it. But I was really interested in the heroism of some of the stories inside and some of these stories. Like in Frankenstein, as a kid, you start to understand the sympathy of, like, wait, he's not just a monster. There's more here. And Dracula especially fascinated me. And I found out just recently, like, I'm not only Polish, but apparently I'm half Romanian. And it really makes sense that I have Romanian or Transylvanian specifically, according to my ancestry, DNA stuff. It kind of makes sense that that's inside me, because it explains a lot about why I was so obsessed with these dark scales, like the Phrygian mode and alternative Eastern European scales, and these dark, these deep tones and experimental music when I was a kid. It just kind of, the hereditary aspect kind of explains that I have that Polish and Transylvanian blood in me. And to be kind of stereotypical, it kind of determined a lot of the films I liked and the kind of music and the auras I was trying to create with my scores.
And what about silent films? Were you watching silent films, you know, before you actually started scoring them? Did you have an interest in silent films?
I didn't really know about silent films till much later, and then I just dove into them in my 20s. I was lucky enough to, there were a couple of great happy coincidences that happened in my career, very fortunate about. Sandra Bernhack is a person I contacted randomly in New York by phone saying, hey, I need a print for Nosferatu. She was in charge of the Killiam collection and had a library of hundreds of films that she was dying to get out there in the early days of DVD. And so she hooked me up with the obvious ones I wanted were, like, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Nosferatu. So Nosferatu is really the turning point for me, because I dove into that score as an electric guitar score and performed in Los Angeles at the Cinematheque for the Directors Guild, and also performed in New York City. And that was really the first film that hit me like, this is everything I loved about horror movies, except it's this silent first version of it. So I was able to, it's kind of selfish when you're a composer, because 71 minutes is music, me playing to Nosferatu. And in a modern film, you know, a composer, unless it's an action movie, would be lucky to get 11 actual minutes, you know, of score in a film. So this idea of a 71 minute score really blew me away, and thought I could really learn how to write music if I have these long forms that I have to kind of struggle with. So I wrote an electric guitar and acoustic guitar and hammered dulcimer score for that and played all the instruments live. And that was kind of my my first real dive into the horror movie and the silent film as a live accompanist with new music.
So what can you tell me about working on this particular film?
Well, that was Sandra Bernhack and I have a funny relationship, because she was always trying to get me to look past horror movies. I was like the 14-year-old. I was 30 years old, but I was like the 14-year-old, like, hey, I want something more scary. And she was trying to get me into these amazing things like Christmas Past, which I did for Kino DVD. But I had really pestered her for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with John Barrymore, because it's a huge landmark film, but it's really not known. And I had studied film for years, and I did not see it. I did not even see it in the New York revivals. And I was just blown away when I saw it, because it was such a deeply human and disturbing film, with John Barrymore tearing up the role with almost no makeup at all other than lighting. So I got hooked on the film, Matt, and then Sandra lined up for me to do it. And this connects with Lincoln Center, where Sayre Maxfield, the director of film events at Lincoln Center in the 2000s, she commissioned me to do the score so I could conduct it live with an orchestra in 2004. So Jekyll and Hyde turned into a score, and I turned it, after seeing the film, with Millicent playing these little piano sections, silent film, of course, you don't know what she's doing, but I thought that was really intriguing to make piano the main part of this film. So I turned it into a piano concerto for chamber orchestra, and was able to get the great Anthony DeMar, who's a new music virtuoso, with it. He performed the solo with the orchestra that I conducted in 2004.
I'm thinking, were those scenes with Millicent a starting point for you when actually approaching the project?
They are. They were, because just like when I did Broken Blossoms, when you're watching a film, and then it's so crazy when you're a composer watching a silent film and you see a musician wailing on an instrument, and you just think, what a strange thing to focus on, because the director, D.W. Griffith, or John Robertson in the case of Jekyll and Hyde, they know we can't hear what that person's playing. So that was always like an immediate window open for me, where with Millicent playing the piano and these strange, it's like every time she misses Dr. Jekyll, she's like doing this piano piece. And I kind of just wrote a kind of subplot that she was working on this song for him, always trying to be romantically involved with him. And throughout the whole movie, every time she went back to piano, I looked at what her hands were doing, and I just made up direct one-to-one music. It's called Mickey Mousing in the silent era, where you really try to connect with the visual action. So that directed it to be a piano concerto, Matt, because what she was doing was more than a couple seconds on screen. It became a prop that became important to the plot. So I wrote this whole thing as if this unfinished waltz she was writing for him comes up in the very end. And the only time it's performed in its entirety as a song is at the very end of the film, where when he's dead on the lab floor, she's just sitting there looking off into space and just thinking of the song that she was writing for him for their presumed wedding day. So it's kind of a romantic notion on that, where I turned it into a piano concerto with somebody as ferocious as Tony DeMar playing it. I knew I could really push the range of you know, ferocious Mr. Hyde music, and also kind of explore the sentimentality of the turn of the century.
And, you know, this may be a silly question, but when you work in a film that, you know, was made 100 years ago, or nearly 100 years ago, do you feel like it's part of your work to sort of update the film with your music for a more modern audience?
That's a great question, because there's a lot of controversy, as you can imagine. You know, some people want only the original score that was played with that film, and are very against new music for silent film. And I do sympathize with them in one aspect. But many of these films don't have the original score intact, because a lot of the accompaniment back in the silent days from 1909 to 1927 was improvised by the performers at a pipe organ or a piano. And they had set pieces, like here's the same chase on Tuesday night could be played on Wednesday night for a different film. So some of these films have intact scores that are, you know, restored and recreated, and I'm all for that. Some of these scores don't. So when there's no real intact existing score, I feel like my only obligation is to not try to write a fake score from 1920. You know, I don't want to pretend I'm in the ragtime era or the early jazz era or the very sentimental vaudeville era. So my only obligation is I feel like I should write new music exactly how I feel and hear it. And that way it's true to myself, and the audience can either say, oh, that's a whole new score. Some people like it. And of course, some people really don't like it because they want to hear a 1920s style thing. So my theory is if you want to hear a 1920s style, go to those original composers, you know, those of the era, and work with that music. But if you're doing a new score, basically my position where they bring me in is write a whole new score, totally original, and it might reflect this day and age, and it could also reflect a little bit of nostalgia as well.
I'd love to know a little more about the performance side of things when you're performing these scores in front of people. I'm wondering, do you feel like as a musician you connect with the actors on the screen or even the director through the way the film is put together? And is there a challenge in perhaps establishing that connection? Does that connection inform you in a way?
I think it does inform me, but not only do you feel the connection when you have the live screening or the big screen, like at the Walter Reed at Lincoln Center, you have a kind of, the musicians start to get attached to the actors. They start glancing over during their rest times. And also you develop a relationship with the audience, especially when I did Broken Blossoms. It's a very sentimental score and tragic score. And that was the one I did in 2008. That's also on Turner Classics. And that score, Anne and Jekyll and Hyde, you could really feel the audience reacting to the live music. And they seem to be 100% with you on the idea that this music was dragging them right into that film. And you definitely get the feeling that they would not have had the same emotional experience, you know, watching it in sheer silence. And you do feel a connection to the director, because when you watch it over and over again, you really start to see how that director thinks. And in a moviola, when I worked at Rochester at the Eastman House, you're sitting on a crank moviola like it was 1930, and I'm just cranking through manually these frames, and you feel like, you know, D.W. Griffith or Robertson could be in the next room, because I'm cranking through old school film the same way as if it was 1920.
This has been fascinating so far, and I wanted to kind of go back to something that you mentioned earlier, your new project, Lux Internum. I believe there's a connection between your concerto score for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and this new piano collection, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Thanks for bringing that up. I'm very excited about this project because, as you mentioned, when we spoke earlier, during the COVID isolation, I can't work live with musicians anymore in studios for a long time. So Svetlana Belsky, this amazing interpreter who specializes in new music like Busoni, it's a very unheard of composers, unseen composers. She's been working with me on this piece, Lux Internum, which is Latin for internal light. And it's unapologetic nocturnes that I wrote, 12 pieces of music that are meant to be kind of end of the day, quiet. And one of the pieces, number 9, is pulled directly from that waltz that I mentioned from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that I'm just imagining Millicent was writing for Dr. Jekyll. So that little tune, that little waltz tune that's very uncharacteristic of me and my music to do something like that. I got a good response to that from people, and they asked me to hear it again. So I borrowed it for the Nocturne collection, and it turned out to be Svetlana's blind taste test. I asked her, you know, what did she like? And she picked out that one as her favorite tune, actually, on the new Nocturne collection.
And where will that be coming out?
That'll be coming out in late fall through Atlantic Screen Group as my publisher, but Film Tracks in the U.S., they'll be releasing it in, I believe, the late fall, according to their production schedule. And it'll be searchable under Luke's Internum with Svetlana Belsky, B-E-L-S-K-Y.
Great. I just wanted to ask you as a final question, just going back to the times that we're currently living in, do you find that exploring or experimenting with new technologies and new ways of working is an exciting experience?
It is. It's actually a compensatory kind of experience. It really makes up for things that you're missing. For example, the editing process on the Nocturnes for Svetlana was exhausting. She found all kinds of little ambiguities in my score that, and instead of going back and forth with letters or emails even, she was just zipping off these quick cryptic notes on Facebook, which is, you know, it's unheard of. In the past, I've never worked like this, but she'd just send a, you know, measure five, is that a G sharp or natural? You know, so dozens of those little edit notes that replaced our live session where I would have been sitting there in the recording booth and then able to ask questions on the fly. So that quick back and forth dialogue with something as simple as Facebook really kept the sessions going, because she was asking me in real time, you know, what's going on page 40, you know?
Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.